often sings his entire repertoire one after another. This oral chameleon is thus more pertinent to the project than it is possible to express here. The title also referred to the fact that this piece is antiphonal. Two instrumentally identical groups face each other across a hall, and there is a great deal of imitation by one side of the other, which is also strikingly relevant for this album as a whole. Local and ritual are meshed in ancient societies, so we have given great emphasis to an inclusion of the sound qualities of the environment in which a performance took place, and which are, in fact, the electrical replay qualities of the grooved message. The music has been chosen to represent the extremes and particular points of the musical continuum designated by staccato and legato, the musical equivalent of consonants and vowels. The sound-producing and instrumental categories have been consciously used in a way that attempts to demonstrate their relationship to the socio-philosophical and religious attitudes of the ancient world. First was the voice, vocal music, spoken, solo, and ensemble song. Next, representation, from the membranophones, drums, which is a category of idiophones, or tuned percussion instruments, such as gongs and lithophones, but which also includes clapping and foot stamping. Chordophones are stringed instruments, bowed or plucked. We have chosen a recording of a Chinese plectrum instrument, the hui tra, but no bowed instrument, deciding that musically speaking, the sostenuto effect would be taken care of by members of the aerophone family, which includes all blown wind instruments. For this album, we have featured the horns or trumpets of the Amitabha Chenden Kala and the whistling on Wu Ting Di Lin Chao Chui. The acoustic means of producing sound, which are unfathomably ancient in human history, are inextricably interwoven with religious philosophical views about the nature of the universe. Through most ancient cultures, the four elements have been considered to be earth, air, fire, and water, and this recording reflects this. Our instrumental selection surprisingly encompasses both the acoustic and the electronic. Further, foregrounding the close interrelation of primitive bodily activity with these elements, a larger prior categorization being a customary differentiation or juxtaposition of nature and culture on the part of cultural anthropologists, was important to Mr. Snow in both political and social and aesthetic senses. The music on this record was assembled from diverse sources. French, German, Russian, English, American, and Canadian musicologists have all made contributions. The first practical method of recording sound was devised by Leon Scott for his phonoautograph of 1857. In 1877, Thomas Alva Edison made advances which were immediately improved upon by Alexander Graham Bell and others. Then, in 1888, Edison made his phonograph commercially available to the public, a machine which played grooved wax cylinders. It is sometimes thought that discs were developed later, but this is not so, as Emil Berliner was working on the disc method in 1887 and had his gramophone for sale in 1888. Discs soon became standard, as they could be mass-produced, whereas cylinders had to be individually made. The new invention was, of course, a sensation. Dr. William Channis wrote in Illustrated London News, 3rd August 1878, "Spoken languages will be preserved from century to century with all the peculiarities of pronunciation, dialect, and brogue." As we go now to see the Stereopticon, we shall go to the public halls or galleries of sound where the treasures of speech and song will be brought out and reproduced as loud or louder than when first spoken or sung by the truly great ones of this earth. Within a dozen years, some of the great singers will be induced to sing into the ear of the phonograph, and the electrotyped cylinders thus obtained will be put into the hand organs of the streets, and we shall hear the actual voices of our best singers ground out at every street corner. This astute article went on to mention the possibilities of recording, quote, "the waves on the beach, the noises of animals, even the tumult of battles." Many famous personages were invited by Edison to record their reaction to the new invention. in 1888 was this from Sir Arthur Sullivan. "For myself, I can only say that I am astonished and somewhat terrified at the results of tonight's experiments. Astonished at the wonderful power you have developed, and terrified at the thought that so much hideous and bad music may be put on record forever. We are confident that the music of the last LP cannot be so described. The thrill of authenticity aroused by the first recordings has continued to be a factor in our perception of recorded music. That there is a direct transmission through engravings of acoustic vibrations produced in the past by musical instruments played in some other room through their emanation from our loudspeakers is the suspension of disbelief of the sound recording medium. Yes, magic. It is still a thrill to be able to hear Louis Armstrong's Hot 7 play Potato Head Blues in 1929 in Chicago, or the exquisite last recording, 1950, of the great classical pianist Dino Lipatti, who died shortly after making them. But recording itself has recently gone through some subtle and important changes, which will alter the above-mentioned form of oral belief. From being an instrument of documentation, sound recording has become a musical instrument itself. Recording has become as much a process of creation as of memorization. This sense of recording was an important part of the great Canadian classical pianist Glenn Gould's thought about the future of music. Aural space is now created in a way that relates interestingly to the structural innovations of perspective in the Renaissance visual art. Multi-track taping has introduced the deception of ensemble. The impression played simultaneously is more and more constructed by an assembling of tape tracks, each of which was played slash recorded on a separate occasion. Working with this as a truth of the music, the compatibility of electronically produced sound, synthesizers, drum machines, samples with recordings, is another side of this new simulacrum. And as an open raison d'etre of the recording product artifact is still extremely rare, as is hearing it. We must also take note of what seems like the triumph of equal temperament in the East, as an extraordinary violinist, cellist, and pianist, interpreters of the West's classical, romantic, and modern repertoires, seemingly pour out of Korea, Japan, and China, and rock and roll pounds its basic harmonies around the world. And Sony is, after all, Japanese. The internal combustion engine was, of course, followed by our other great old machine, the piano. And the present development of electronic music instruments is largely Japanese. It is interesting to note that the period from the start of recording's presence, roughly after 1900, is the most intensely creative period in musical history. Recording has been a decisive factor in the astonishing range and depth of music produced, especially by making available for study far more music than a previous lifetime of listening could have encompassed. This is a triumph of technology in its most beneficent, gratifying aspect. Against the losses of ancient social musics, we must balance the arrival of new global creative individual with previously undreamed of resources and possibilities." Wow. Okay. So a pretty dense little theoretical essay there, which seems to be more or less historically accurate in most points, especially with regard to its meditation on the way recording technology has reconfigured what was previously our totally ephemeral relationship to any given performance of piece of music. The notes go on to give track listings, which I'll share with you now. So on side A, there is Wu Ting Di Lin Chao Chui in English, announcing the arrival of the Emperor Wu Ting by the Orchestra of the National Music Institute, Seoul, Korea. Track 2, Si Nopo Da, or By What Signs Will I Come to Understand, by the women of the Bo Sa So Sho tribe, Niger, Southeast Africa. Track 3, O Wachira, Water Ceremony, performed by the Mayan Tonomi and Cree tribespeople, Quebec, Canada. Track 4, I Ching Di Yen Sen, The Strings of Love, Tarn Wing Lun of of the Hui Tra recorded in Ontario, Canada. Track 5, Pol Novi Snik, Full to the Brim, performed by a 16-member male choir, Varda, Carpathia, USSR. Track 6, Speech in Klogen, by Okash from Northern Finland. Side B, Mbosona Mapahia, Battle Song of the Bwounsa, performed by male members of the Kapam Kapam tribe, Angola, West Africa. Track 2, Kuyaskupuk Kwe Gami, or He is Happy Because He Came, performed by the Aniskastuk of the Tornasuk tribe, Siberia, USSR. Track 3, Amitabha Chenden Kala, or The Simultaneous Welcome of Amitabha, performed by the 12 monks of the Kayupa sect, Bhutan. Track 4, Roya Kurilu, The Dawn Ceremony, performed by Sabane from Elaha, Brazil. And finally, track 5, Raga Lata, performed by Palak Chawal, India. Okay, interesting stuff, but maybe pretty standard ethnomusicological fare. We open up the record, and we can find more detailed descriptions of each of the recordings. But when we look over in the lower right-hand side of the record, we find a block of text written in mirror reverse. What is this? Well, I held it up to the mirror, and I took a little photograph. And what we have here is Snow coming clean, his admission of what these musical recordings actually are. And I want to read you this much briefer selection of written material. It says here, "The music on this record is new music, made in memory of the old. All the music on this record was played and performed and conceived and recorded by Michael Snow. Equipment used by Mr. Snow. Tandberg Crossfield Tape Recorder. Usher 24 Special Tape Recorder. Usher 4000 Report Tape Recorder. Sony TC-D5M Cassette Tape Recorder. TEAC Tascam 4-Track Porta Studio Cassette Tape Recorder. No synthesizer or sampler was used. Final master tape copies and adjustments by Paul Hodge at the Music Gallery, Toronto. Thanks to the Music Gallery for the loan of several instruments." The notes go on to explain how the music contained on this LP was made through tape manipulations, Michael Snow recording himself speaking in tongues, the plucking of rubber bands. All of it is a fraud. None of this is music from indigenous or vanishing cultures. And with this in mind, I think it's probably best to position this record, the last LP, alongside works by Orson Welles, things like his radio play, The War of the World, or his late mockumentary, F is for Fake, in that the record purports to be something that it is not. And most of its interest lies in that discrepancy between what the record purports to be and what the record is. Now, there's a lot more I wish we had time to say about this record, but I also want us all to be able to hear it. So I'm going to quit with the gabbin and get this baby on the turntable and let you all listen to the last LP, Unique Last Recordings of the Music of Ancient Cultures by Michael Snow.
Yeah.